Chapter 56. But though Rand was simple, there were bounds to her simplicity. Paula, apostrophe she said, with an undeceivable air, I don't think you should run after a young man like this. Suppose he shouldn't care for you by this time. Apostrophe apostrophe, it was no occasion for further affectation. I am sure he will, apostrophe answered her niece flatly. I have not the least fear about it, nor would you, if you knew how he is. He will forgive me anything. Apostrophe apostrophe, well, pray don't show yourself forward. Some people are apt to fly in two extremes. Apostrophe apostrophe, Paula blushed a trifle, and reflected, and made no answer. However, her purpose seemed not to be permanently affected, for the next morning she was up bedhams and preparing to depart, and they proceeded almost without stopping to the architectural curiosity town which had so quickly interested her. Nevertheless, her ardent manner of yesterday underwent a considerable change, as if she had a fear that, as her aunt suggested, in her endeavor to make amends for cruel injustice, she was allowing herself to be carried too far. On nearing the place she said, Aunt, I think you had better call upon him, and you need not tell him we have come on purpose. Let him think, if he will, that we heard he was here, and would not leave without seeing him. You can also tell him, that I am anxious, to clear up a misunderstanding, and ask him to call at our hotel. Apostrophe apostrophe, but as she looked over the dreary suburban erections which lined the road from the railway to the old quarter of the town, it occurred to her that Somerset would at that time of day be engaged in one or other of the medieval buildings thereabout, and that it would be a much neater thing to meet him, as if by chance in one of these edifices than to call upon him anywhere. Instead of putting up at any hotel, they left the maids and baggage at the station, and hiring a carriage, Paula told the coachman to drive them to such likely places as she could think of. He'll never forgive you, apostrophe said her aunt, as they rumbled into the town. Won't he? Apostrophe apostrophe said Paula, with soft faith. I'll see about that. Apostrophe apostrophe, what are you going to do when you find him? Tell him point blank that you are in love with him? Apostrophe apostrophe, act in such a manner that he may tell me he is in love with me. Apostrophe apostrophe, they first visited a large church at the upper end of a square that sloped its graveled surface to the western shine, and was pricked out with little avenues of young pollard limes. The church within was one to make any Gothic architect take lodgings in its vicinity for a fortnight, though it was just now crowded with a forest of scaffolding for repairs in progress. Mrs. Goodman sat down outside, and Paula, entering, took a walk in the form of a horseshoe, that is, up the south aisle, round the apse, and down the north side, but no figure of a melancholy young man sketching met her eye anywhere. The sun that blazed in at the west doorway smote her face as she emerged from beneath it, and revealed real sadness there. This is not all the old architecture of the town by far, apostrophe she said to her aunt with an air of confidence. Coachman, drive to St. Jacques. Apostrophe apostrophe, he was not at St. Jacques. Looking from the west end of that building, the girl observed the end of a steep narrow street of antique character, which seemed a likely haunt. Beckoning to her aunt to follow in the fly, Paula walked down the street. She was transported to the Middle Ages. It contained the shops of tinkers, braziers, bellows menders, hollow turners, and other quaintest trades, their fronts open to the street beneath stories of timber overhanging so far on each side that a slit of sky was left at the top for the light to descend, and no more. A blue misty obscurity pervaded the atmosphere, into which the sun thrust oblique staves of light. It was a street for a medievalist to revel in, toss up his hat and shout hurrah in, send for his luggage, come and live in, die and be buried in. As he had never supposed such a street to exist outside the imaginations of antiquarians. Smells direct from the 16th century hung in the air in all their original integrity, and without a modern taint. The faces of the people in the doorway seemed those of individuals who habitually gazed on the great Francis, and spoke of Henry VIII as the king across the sea. She inquired of a coppersmith if an English artist had been seen here lately. With a suddenness that almost discomfited her, he announced that such a man had been seen, sketching a house just below the Vieux Manoir de François Premier. Just turning to see that her aunt was following in the fly, Paula advanced to the house. The wood framework of the lower story was black and varnished. The upper story was brown and not varnished. Carved figures of dragons, griffins, satyrs, and mermaids swarmed over the front. An ape stealing apples was the subject of this cantilever, a man undressing of that. These figures were cloaked with little cobwebs which waved in the breeze, so that each figure seemed alive. She examined the woodwork closely. Here and there she discerned pencil marks which had no doubt been jotted thereon by Somerset as points of admeasurement, in the way as he had seen him mark them at the castle. Some fragments of paper lay below. There were penciled lines on them, and they bore a strong resemblance to a spoiled leaf of Somerset's sketchbook. Paula glanced up, and from a window above protruded an old woman's head, which, with the exception of the white handkerchief tied round it, was so nearly of the color of the carvings that she might easily have passed as of a piece with them. The aged woman continued motionless, the remains of her eyes being bent upon Paula, who asked her in Englishwoman's French where the sketcher had gone. Without replying, the crone produced a hand and extended finger from her side, and pointed towards the lower end of the street. Paula went on, the carriage following with difficulty, on account of the obstructions in the thoroughfare. At bottom, the street abutted on a wide one with customary modern life flowing through it, and as she looked, Somerset crossed her front along this street, hurrying as if for a wager. By the time that Paula had reached the bottom, Somerset was a long way to the left, and she recognized to her dismay that the busy transverse street was one which led to the railway. She quickened her pace to a run. He did not see her. He even walked faster. She looked behind for the carriage. The driver, in emerging from the 16th century street to the 19th, had apparently turned to the right, instead of to the left as he had done, so that her aunt had lost sight of her. However, she dare not mind it, if Somerset would but look back. He partly turned, but not far enough, and it was only to hail a passing omnibus upon which she discerned his luggage. Somerset jumped in, the omnibus drove on, and diminished up the long road. Paula stood hopelessly still, and in a few minutes puffs of steam showed her that the train had gone. She turned and waited, the two or three children who had gathered round her looking up sympathizingly in her face. Her aunt, having now discovered the direction of her flight, drove up and beckoned to her. "What's the matter?" asked Mrs. Goodman in alarm. "Why? That you should run like that, and look so weebigan. Nothing. Only I have decided not to stay in this town. What, he is gone, I suppose? Yes. Exclaimed Paula, with tears of vexation in her eyes. It isn't every man who gets a woman of my position to run after him on foot, and alone, and he ought to have looked round. Drive to the station. I want to make an inquiry. On reaching the station she asked the booking clerk some questions, and returned to her aunt with a cheerful countenance. Mr. Somerset has only gone to Keene, she said. He is the only Englishman who went by this train, so there is no mistake. There is no other train for 2 hours. We will go on then, shall we? I am indifferent, said Mrs. Goodman. But, Paula, do you think this quite right? Perhaps he is not so anxious for your forgiveness as you think. Perhaps he saw you, and wouldn't stay. A momentary dismay crossed her face, but it passed, and she answered, "Aunt, that's nonsense. I know him well enough, and can assure you that, if he had only known I was running after him, he would have looked round sharply enough, and would have given his little finger, rather than have missed me. I don't make myself so silly as to run after a gentleman without good grounds, for I know well that it is an undignified thing to do. Indeed, I could never have thought of doing it if I had not been so miserably in the wrong. ...2. That evening when the sun was dropping out of sight, they started for the city of Somerset's pilgrimage. Paula seated herself with her face toward the western sky, watching from her window the broad red horizon, across which moved thin poplars lopped to human shapes, like the walking forms in Nebuchadnezzar's furnace. It was dark when the travelers drove into Keene. She still persisted in her wish to casually encounter Somerset in some aisle, lady chapel, or crypt to which he might have bedeconed himself to copy and learn the secret of the great artists who had erected those nooks. Mrs. Goodman was for discovering his inn, and calling upon him in a straightforward way, but Paula seemed afraid of it, and they went out in the morning on foot. First they searched the church of St. Sauveur, he was not there, next the church of St. John, then the church of St. Pierre, but he did not reveal himself, nor had any verger seen or heard of such a man. Outside the latter church was a public flower garden, and she sat down to consider beside a round pool in which water lilies grew, and goldfish swam, near beds of fiery geraniums, dahlias, and verbenas just past their bloom. Her enterprise had not been justified by its results so far, but meditation still urged her to listen to the little voice within and push on. She accordingly rejoined her aunt, and they drove up the hill to the Abbey aux Dames, the day by this time having grown hot and oppressive. The church seemed absolutely empty, the void being emphasized by its grateful coolness. But on going towards the east end they perceived a bald gentleman close to the screen, looking to the right, and to the left, as if much perplexed. Paula merely glanced over him, his back being toward her, and turning to her aunt said softly, I wonder how we get into the choir? That's just what I am wondering, said the old gentleman, abruptly facing round, and Paula discovered that the countenance was not unfamiliar to her eye. Since knowing Somerset as he had added to her gallery of celebrities a photograph of his father, the academician, and he it was now who confronted her. For the moment embarrassment, due to complicated feelings, brought a slight blush to her cheek, but being well aware that he did not know her, she answered, coolly enough, I suppose we must ask someone. And we certainly would, if there were anyone to ask, he said, still looking eastward, and not much at her. I have been here a long time, but nobody comes. Not that I want to get in on my own account, for though it is 30 years since I last set foot in this place, I remember it as if it were but yesterday. Indeed. I have never been here before, said Paula. Naturally. But I am looking for a young man who is making sketches in some of these buildings, and it is as likely as not that he is in the crypt under this choir, for it is just such out-of-the-way nooks that he prefers. It is very provoking that he should not have told me more distinctly in his letter where to find him. Mrs. Goodman, who had gone to make inquiries, now came back and informed them that as he had learned that it was necessary to pass through the hotel due to the choir, to do which they must go outside. Thereupon they walked on together, and Mr. Somerset, quite ignoring his troubles, made remarks upon the beauty of the architecture, and in absence of mind, by reason either of the subject or of his listener, retained his hat in his hand, after emerging from the church, while they walked all the way across the Place and into the hospital gardens. A very civil man, said Mrs. Goodman to Paula privately. Yes, said Paula, who had not told her aunt that she recognized him. One of the sisters now preceded them towards the choir and crypt, Mr. Somerset asking her if a young Englishman was or had been sketching there. On receiving a reply in the negative, Paula nearly betrayed herself by turning, as if her business there too ended with the information. However, she went on again, and made a pretense of looking round, Mr. Somerset also staying in a spirit of friendly attention to his countrywomen. They did not part from him till they had come out from the crypt, and again reached the west front, on their way to which he additionally explained that it was his son he was looking for, who had arranged to meet him here, but had mentioned no inn at which he might be expected. When he had left them, Paula informed her aunt whose company they had been sharing. Her aunt began expostulating with Paula for not telling Mr. Somerset what they had seen of his son's movements. It would have eased his mind at least, apostrophe she said. I was not bound to ease his mind at the expense of showing what I would rather conceal. I am continually hampered in such generosity as that by the circumstance of being a woman. ... Well, it is getting too late to search further tonight. ... It was indeed almost evening twilight in the streets, though the graceful freestone spires to a depth of about 20 feet from their summits were still dyed with the orange tints of a vanishing sun. The two relatives dined privately as usual, after which Paula looked out of the window of her room and reflected upon the events of the day. A tower rising into the sky quite near at hand showed her that some church or other. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.